Hi, this is Perry, and you're listening to The Beauty Brains, episode 91. Hello, and welcome to The Beauty Brains, a show where we, real, actual cosmetic chemists, give you straight answers about beauty products, claims, and the cosmetic industry. I'm your host, Perry Romanowski, and with me, as always, my beaker-washing sidekick, Randy Schuler. How's it going, Randy?
I think in the pantheon of cosmetic chemists, the beaker-washing flunky is just about as low as it gets. So thanks, I appreciate it.
Well, I remember last show you kind of demoted me.
I was just kidding.
Actually, and I am too. Actually, you've never washed a single beaker for me in the history of us.
There you go.
Hey, we've got a really big show today, but first a little chit-chat. I was in a commercial, or I filmed a commercial earlier this week.
Is this a conflict of interest?
No, it's a commercial in an area which is completely different from cosmetics. It was a car dealership commercial.
I thought maybe it was a new sponsor for the show, but what? Okay, explain this to me then.
My sister calls me up on Sunday. She's like, I need somebody to be in a commercial tomorrow.
And so that's much for the casting process.
All right. But that's the beauty of the being a beauty blogger, professional bloggers, is somebody could call you up and you're like, oh, yeah, I can take an entire day to just do that.
This explains the quality of the work on the website, but all right, continue.
No, it was lots of fun. It reminded me of being like on like professional shows where they had, you know, 100 people are working on this short bit.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So it was a lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to seeing the final thing. But my line was this. Mm-hmm. My must-haves are Bluetooth, a good warranty, and LED headlights. And they told me I killed it.
Well, when that finally airs, if you get some sort of link to that, we could put that on the website. I don't know if that's appropriate or not, but there you go.
Yeah, we'll see. That's fun. So we've got a fascinating show for you today, right? So you know how I like to do the teaser, so here's our new teaser.
Okay.
Stay tuned, and you can learn how licorice can help fight cavities, why preservative-free products are dangerous, and why even older people should continue to use sunscreen.
Oh, wow. I'm glued to my seat.
But first, why don't we read some of the iTunes things that we have?
That's important.
Incidentally, I've been looking a little bit at iTunes more and trying to get the Beauty Brains to get a little higher in the rankings. Because if you look up, like, beauty podcasts, mm-hmm. like, the number one thing that comes in, like, the last time that they recorded something was back in 2013.
Those bastards.
But we are, I have to say, we are, like, in the top 13 when you do a beauty search. But okay. The one thing that does help when you're doing when you're trying to get ranks in iTunes is that you do have iTunes reviews, and so we appreciate them, and we like to read out our reviews on the show.
Yeah, it's the one little thing we can do for you guys. If you take a minute of your time to write a review, we promise we'll mention your name and maybe even read your review on the show. So we have a couple today. I'll do these quickly. We have Jessie from Australia. Think about that, all the way from down under.
Wow.
She says, one of my favorites. I love how I'm learning something and being entertained at the same time. Then YKN Espresso calls us the ultimate cosmetic debunkers, which I like a lot. She says, our show is the perfect way to end a stressful day because we fulfill the geek in her with our witty humor. Oh. Gallery C says, so glad I found this podcast. What a unique, informative, and wonderful show. AABBCCD says, so much useful information about products and even marketing techniques that companies use when selling products. They really allow you to be brainy about your beauty. There's a nice little plug for the tagline. And then finally, S. Baker 15184 says, two dudes reveal the honest truth. So succinct. I like that one. Thank you, S. Baker. And thank you, everybody else. So please take a couple minutes. Go leave us a review on iTunes. It helps us attract new fans as well as get sponsors for the show.
Yeah. And it lets other people know about the show. And we actually, I was looking at the stats of the Beauty Brain show, now that we're keeping track of these sorts of things.
Yeah.
But that inspired this this new quick game that I came up with before we get on to the science stories.
Oh, okay.
I thought we'd try something a little different this time. Now, in looking at the stats, you know that the Beauty Brains is like an international show, right?
Indeed.
And I was looking, we get about 5,000 downloads per show, so
that's not bad.
Not bad.
Not bad.
All right, let's see how well you can guess where our audience is. As you saw on iTunes, it was from Australia.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got the list of the top 10 countries in which the Beauty Brains has listened.
Okay.
Now, of course, the U.S. is number one. We're a U.S.-based show. So
sure, that makes sense. Yeah.
But I'm going to give you 1 minute to see if you can guess what other countries are in the top 10. Okay, let's begin this game. One minute.
All right.
Ready?
Okay.
You've got 1 minute. Go.
Okay, Germany.
Hey, everyone.
France.
This is Randy speaking from the Beauty United Brains Kingdom. Control Room.
Got it.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but this segment is just not working out. When we were recording it, Perry's game of name the states where the Beauty Brains are popular seemed like a good idea, but now that I'm editing the sound files, it occurs to me it's a bit narcissistic to base a game on our geographical popularity. Even we're not that egocentric. I also realize how unbearably boring it must be to listen to me struggle to list state names for 60 seconds. Ain't nobody got time for that. So, in conclusion, I think Perry was well-intended when he came with the game. It's just not one of our better efforts. Anyway, like I said, just wanted to apologize and assure you that this won't happen again. Please, don't let this impact our iTunes reviews. Okay, now, back to the program.
The first non-English-speaking country is Germany. So, but we appreciate all of our listeners from around the globe.
Yes.
If you're anywhere in the globe, feel free to post an iTunes review.
Yes, you can do that.
All right. Are we ready to move on to the beauty science stories?
Yeah, I think we should. Who's going first today?
Why don't you go ahead and go first?
Okay. I never realized how important it is to have a good perfume for poop.
What?
Well... And I say this jokingly, but, you know, we take a lot of things for granted here in a first world country. And one of those is proper sanitation. But in a lot of places, you know, without proper plumbing, they have to use outdoor toilets and latrines, which, you know, is not as much fun as it sounds. Sometimes the stench is so bad in those latrines that people will actually stop using them and just go outside. And when that happens, then the groundwater becomes contaminated. And then that leads to the spread of all sorts of diseases. So this is not a trivial problem. This affects like 2.5 billion people across the world. Now, here's where the cosmetic science comes in. Chemists at Firmenich, which, as you well know, is one of the largest fragrance companies in the world, they're working in India, Kenya, and South Africa to help solve this problem by analyzing the scent of these outdoor toilets. So they're using a technique called headspace analysis, where they basically measure the gas in the room.
That's
funny because in the Navy, you know, toilets are called heads. So headspace analysis is very ironic there. But anyway, they chemically analyze the odors in the latrine to determine which are the most offending components. And then, according to the articles, quote, the scientists then confirm by smelling. How'd you like to have that job? You know, it's like, yeah, it smells like shit. Wow. So anyway, once the fragrance chemists understand the exact nature of the odorants, then they can create scents that counteract the bad smells. So if they can do that, they can encourage more people to use the latrines, which would lead to an overall improvement in sanitary conditions, which obviously is better for everybody. So this was a case of better living through cosmetic chemistry.
Wow. Well, you know, I do a fair number of organized races, and they always have a large number of these, portable toilets. And I have to say, over the years, they've improved the odors inside those toilets. So maybe this technology is already being implemented, right?
Or maybe they're just using that poo-pourri product. Do you remember that one? Spray the stuff in the toilet bowl with that,
it was
that hilarious commercial.
Way back in show number 3.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, that's fascinating about if you become a perfumer, you could end up smelling latrines for your job. All right, let's move on. The first story I want to talk about demonstrates that the beauty industry may not be reading their consumers properly. According to a recent global survey of over 10,000 people, it seems that consumers are getting tired of seeing all the beautiful people in ads for beauty products. Instead, one advertising executive thinks that consumers want to see images of regular people in ads instead of beautiful models. The story goes on to say, in the survey, they found that only 1 in 10 respondents indicated that their body is a source of embarrassment, disappointment, or shame.
Which I
think there must have been something wrong with the way they asked that question. Based on all the people I know. They also found that among Canadian respondents, and this was a story from Canada, 76% said they were worried that that outer beauty seems to be more highly valued than inner beauty. And 72% thought that the world would be a happier place if people weren't so obsessed with physical beauty.
Okay, and these are ads for beauty products, so it does make sense they're going to tend to exaggerate external beauty.
Play on the fears and disappointments of their consumers. but according to this study, maybe people don't have those bad feelings about their things.
Sure.
Also in the survey, 71% of the people thought that photoshopping models and celebrities was harming society.
Yeah, that has gotten kind of ridiculous. Yeah.
So does this mean in the future we're going to see more ads with regular people and, you know, fewer really beautiful people? I don't know, right? There was that Dove campaign for Real Beauty.
The Real Woman? Sure, yeah.
It's been around for a while, and I guess it seems to have been successful. Dove has actually been doing pretty well. The Dove body wash is one of the fastest growing brands in body wash. Hmm. Although, if you think about it, Aveeno, who uses Jennifer Aniston as their spokesperson, they're doing even better than Dove, right? And Dial, who is still using pretty models in their advertising, they're doing better than Dove too. So.
Yeah, that's certainly not the only factor that's going to contribute to the brand success, but it's just interesting. It doesn't seem like, and of course, you know, your study was in Canada, so maybe it just hasn't played out here in the U.S.
Well, the article was from Canada, but the whole study was a global study.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, very interesting.
So, that also points to, well, you know, while people say they want advertisements to reflect themselves, I'm not sure they really do, right? I mean, people often say stuff in surveys that maybe they don't actually believe, maybe that they want to believe this, but they don't actually believe it.
Right. Or they think it'll make them look good if that's the answer they give.
Exactly. So instead of giving the answer that they really think, they're giving the answer that makes them look the best. So that's why I rarely have faith in any kind of surveys or really any other type of market research. So there you go. Look for your commercials and beauty products to change, or maybe not.
All right. Hey, Perry, as the most famous cosmetic chemist in the world...
According to Google.
I know that one of the complaints that is frequently leveled against you is that you're just a shill for big cosmetics. Now, I'm not convinced of that myself, but some people have complained that we're always bashing natural products.
Hey, I'm not convinced of that either based on my bank account. aren't shills supposed to be rich?
There you go. The poor shill. Back to this idea about natural products. We're not always batching natural products just because they're natural. And when we find natural ingredients that really work, you know, that provide a differentiated benefit, we're quick to point those out. So,
exactly.
So I want to do that today in a little story about a licorice extract that may be able to stop tooth decay.
Really?
Yeah. So, I mean, of course, that's assuming that big dentistry doesn't pull the plug on this show. But scientists from the University of Edinburgh have discovered that this material, transcalcone, I believe it's pronounced, which is related to licorice root, has the ability to inhibit growth of bacteria that contributes to tooth decay. And that bacteria is Streptococcus mutans. And this transcalcone works by inhibiting an enzyme that the bacteria need to thrive. Now, I don't think that means you can throw out your fluoride toothpaste and just chow down on a pack of Twizzlers. You also can't just gnaw on a piece of licorice root. And that's because, you know, while this compound is present naturally, you know, it needs to be standardized. And that's one of the big problems with using natural ingredients. If you just, you know, pluck it from its natural source, it may not have the right concentration or the right level of purity needed to do the job consistently, because, you know, the amount of a natural ingredient in a natural source will vary tremendously from, well, root to root in this case. You know, but if the material is properly purified and quantified, you know, it's possible it could be used in an anti-cavity chewing gum. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the Wrigley Company, which is right here in Chicago, actually sponsored some of this research. So it'll be interesting to see sort of I would assume it would be an over-the-counter drug product of some sort, but there could be an anti-cavity toothpaste in the works.
Yeah, no, that would be fascinating. Although, you know, making it natural and the difficulty of getting like a new drug approved through the FDA, they'd probably just make the soft claims and put it in a gum and not go that route.
You could certainly do the cosmetic approach.
Right.
We'll see what happens.
It will be interesting. Hey, remember that discussion we had a few show backs about where robots were going to take over people's jobs?
That was one of your better games, I think, Robot or Not.
That's right, Robot or Not. That's right. Well, in that game, we learned that chemists only had about a 10% chance of being taken over by robots. But according to this article I read, it looks like those chances may have increased.
Oh, my God.
According to an article in Cosmetics Design, consumer products giant Procter & Gamble is using high-performance computers to design detergents and shampoo systems.
Hmm.
So they say that now supercomputers that can perform, you know, super fast calculations, you put in a bunch of data, while they used to run like $100 million, the prices have gone down and you can get your own supercomputer for like $500,000.
It's a bargain.
So, well, you know, for a company like P&G,
yeah, it's not
$500,000 is
the money in the coffee fund.
That's right. They don't even work on cost savings project if they're the same.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I guess theoretically now they can use their supercomputer, put in data about surfactants and consumer desires and a bunch of other factors, and they'll come out with the perfect formulation that will score well in consumer research and just work well. So what do you think, Randy? Are we going to be replaced by supercomputers?
I think just at this point it's inevitable. We should just give them a copy of the movie The Matrix and some nuclear weapons and get it over with.
You know, if The Matrix was really true, wouldn't it be great you could just like live inside your own world and then sort of do whatever you want? It's sort of like lucid dreaming.
It sounds like your life right now.
That's right. Next week, I want to run from Madison to Chicago. Oh, wait, I am doing that. Well, I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. And it's mainly because I don't think there's any good data first on figuring out what consumers want, right?
Mm.
Yeah. You know, it's just like that survey. People in surveys, they don't really tell you what they want because they don't really know. And we also don't have great ways of measuring complicated interactions. And so there's just no good data to throw into a supercomputer. So it doesn't matter how fast they can do these calculations. I just don't think it's going to happen anytime soon.
Garbage in, garbage out.
So. Exactly.
Well, you should be asking, will computers or robots replace beauty blog podcasters? That's the real question I ask.
Really?
And speaking of which, I understand congratulations are in order. You did a guest appearance on another podcast in the beauty industry.
Yes, the prestigious Rose Sheet, which is an industry publication about, you know, beauty products and among other things. They're starting their own podcast, and they had me on it as a guest to speak about cosmetic preservatives. So
very interesting, and you know that's something we've touched on, you know, on this program about the trend toward preservative-free products, and you know that's actually making our products less safe.
Right.
And you know, we've given a couple of examples in previous shows where, you know, preservative-free cosmetics have been recalled due to microbial contamination. It's important to keep in mind this is a danger not only in cosmetics but in foods as well. And I just saw a recent news story about a children's brand of preservative-free juice in which the mother discovered mold. I don't know if you saw this. The brand in question was Good to Grow Children's Juice, and according to the story, the mother opened up the bottle, looked in there, and stuck her finger and pulled all sort of gooey stuff out. And sure enough, that was mold. When she complained to the company, their response was, and I quote, "The only way to virtually eliminate the risk of mold would be by adding preservatives to the millions of bottles kids consume every year, and we strongly believe that would be the wrong thing to do to our children." So I mean, it's sort of like in your interview with the Rose Sheet, you talked about, you know, how tough it is to sort of undo this trend when that's the mindset of companies. It's not, that's not what the scientific data says, but that's, right. You know, the companies are insisting that's what they want to do. And that got me thinking, I think the problem is in the way these products are marketed, right? That people have mistakenly got the sense that preservatives are bad. So when a company tells them the product is preservative free, it sounds like a good thing, even though it's not. So I brainstormed a couple of other marketing terms that could be used in place of preservative free.
All right.
We'll see what we can do to help reverse this trend.
Sure.
Right? So instead of saying preservative free on the label, you could say a product is pro-pathogen.
Yes.
Or how about maybe now with more microbes? or my favorite, spoiler alert. Get it? Spoilage.
Yeah, I get it. That's good. Very clever.
And then finally, there's the more long-winded legal version that you could put on the label, which would say, caution, using this unpreserved product could lead to skin infections and other illnesses.
Well, that'll move your product, right?
But so there you go. We don't have to say preservative-free. We can say all those other things instead. So hopefully there's some enterprising marketers out there who, if you want to pick up and run with any of those, help yourself.
And for consumers out there, beauty consumers and even food consumers, preservative-free is not a positive thing. All right. Hey, I was listening to that NPR show Science Friday with Ira Flatow?
Yes, I'm familiar with it.
Excellent show. And if you have an interest in science, it's well worth a listen. They have a podcast version, of course. Anyway, they had a guy on there talking about some work he's been doing on skin cells and somatic mutations. Hmm. And the mutations that they found in physiologically normal skin. So what they did was they took skin cells from people's eyelids. I don't know why there, but...
Yikes.
And the point was that the skin looked perfectly normal. And when they did a DNA analysis of those cells, they found that about 25% of the cells that looked perfectly normal, they had mutations that were on their way to potentially becoming skin cancer.
Oh.
So even if you know, you just look at your skin, right, which looks perfectly fine, mm-hmm, 25% of the cells there have the potential to become skin cancer.
Wow.
Now, in the interview, the researcher said that many people, as they get older, they think that they don't need to use sunscreen as much. And I suppose, like, the advice that we give to use sunscreen, a lot of it is as for anti-aging benefit, right? Because
sure,
it prevents wrinkles and age spots and things. And I suppose if you get old enough, you're like, yeah, my skin's already...
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah.
My skin's
benefit,
already shot.
Yeah.
I mean, right. Yeah, so, right. And you feel like, I don't really get burned that much. So... But this demonstrates that you really should, no matter how old you get, you should continue to use sunscreen because, you know, a quarter of the cells that look perfectly normal on your skin have the potential to become melanomas. And so, you know, to prevent skin cancer, which is, I think it's one of the highest skin or the fastest growing skin cancers in the United States, mm-hmm, you should be wearing sunscreen. I mean, the bottom line is, just use sunscreen every night.
Even if you're not worried about the beauty benefits, wear right, it for the health reasons.
Exactly. So there you go.
You do a good job on these public service announcements, I got to say.
Well, I try. Actually, you know, I was on the Science Friday podcast page where that interview was, and some guy left some stupid comment in there, and I got into a little kerfuffle about trying to change that. It was... I hate the internet and discussions because you get into these, you get trapped into these discussions.
You get sucked in, yeah. For sure.
Yeah, there you go. So I got myself extracted from that, so I feel better.
All right. You know, one of the basic principles of the Beauty Brains is that we make evidence-based recommendations, kind of like the evidence you just talked about for wearing sunscreen. You know, and that means as new evidence becomes available, sometimes we may have to revise our recommendations. And I have one example here related to the volatile silicone ingredient known as cyclomethicone or cyclopenicilloxane.
Sure.
And I can't remember if we talked about this on the show or not. I know we've blogged about it in the past, but, you know, cyclomethicone is a very common ingredient used in a lot of hair and skincare products. It's primarily used as a carrier for other ingredients, especially good at diluting down high molecular weight silicones.
Right.
But it also has some slip-enhancing properties. And then it evaporates after you apply it, so it's good because it doesn't leave a greasy residue on hair or skin. So, and we've long said that's a very safe ingredient to use. Well, according to research published in the EU, cyclomethicone may have some health risks when used at high levels.
Hmm.
So let me explain. The researchers in the EU looked at the margin of safety for this material, right? So that's when you, you look at the idea of the dose making the poison.
Right.
And then, you know, you look at what's your likely exposure to an ingredient based on how it's used. And then that can give you a sense of, you know, if you're below this margin of safety, it's very unlikely that you would be, you know, exposed to any ill health effects. If you're above the margin of safety, then it raises some questions. Well, in this case, they surveyed the manufacturers of products with cyclomethicone and found that in a couple of cases, the percentage of this ingredient in the formula was like 90% or greater. Now, specifically, this was the case for hair shine sprays, which makes sense. We actually used to make those. And, you know, just a heads up for anybody listening, if you buy a hair shine spray like an argan oil spray or a Moroccan oil spray or whatever, take a good look at the ingredient list. I'll bet you the first ingredient is cyclomethicone. Those sprays are generally very, very little oil. So anyway, that's a product category that does use a lot of cyclomethicone. And they also found some body lotions are like 85 or 90% cyclomethicone, which surprised me. I couldn't think of any.
Maybe some serums, but a whole lotion?
Well, that could be, maybe it was a serum. So anyway, and the reason that raised some concern was because that, you know, if the product was accidentally ingested, you're now swallowing a good slug of that. If it was a cream or lotion that's primarily water, you're mostly swallowing water. If it's 85% cyclomethicone, you're now swallowing a lot of cyclomethicone. And then the same concern follows for inhaling such a high dose of that material. So if the product is in a spray of some sort, you're inhaling more, you know, that would put you above that margin of safety limit. So the Scientific Committee on Consumer Safety, the SCCS in the EU, recommends that the use of this material be restricted to some extent. And now, not to get into this too deeply, but there's also a concern about contamination of D4, which is another type of silicone, which is present in small amounts. But that's not really the main issue here. So my point is, you know, we've always said no problem on this ingredient, but there is new evidence that's suggesting for certain applications, you know, you may want to exercise some caution.
Yeah.
So there's your update on cyclomethicone.
Yeah, and we also talked about the environmental impact and how that was found around the world because it's thought to go. So there is building evidence that maybe you should avoid cyclomethicone.
Right, and you'll find that as we find out these things, we'll tell you about them, and we'll change our mind if the evidence, you know, merits that. So we're not married to any mindset. We're married to what the data tells us.
That's right. We are not in the pockets of big cyclomethicone. All right, looks like we have time for just one more quickie.
All right.
Do you ever wonder how those tattoo artists practice?
just on people, I guess. That's a good point.
I mean, I guess they write on paper, they get design on paper.
Draw
but then,
the paper, yeah.
Like, how can you imagine the first time that a guy's doing a tattoo?
Yeah, I don't want to be that person, yeah.
Well... but now there is a new notebook called the Skin Book, which has pages made of synthetic human skin. And so so it's going to make it easier for tattoo artists to practice.
Wait, is this some sort of ledger of Hannibal Lecter? What kind of book are you talking about?
It's like a moleskin notebook.
Okay.
But the pages, instead of being made out of paper, they're made out of synthetic human skin.
But they don't use moleskin, because PETA would be all over that.
They do not use moleskin. It's a synthetic human skin. But this story just reminded me of all the stories in the news. L'Oreal and P&G are both launching big research projects to develop 3D printed human skin.
Right.
I think we talked about that.
Yeah,
so
sure.
Synthetic human skin is all over the place, man. And here's at least one application which will lead to better tattoos, I guess.
It's funny how often tattoos come up in the context of this show. I never would have imagined that, but there you have it.
Well, don't you remember one of our first biggest traffic days was a post we did on a tattoo removal cream?
Oh, yeah, I'd forgotten, but that was back in, 2006 or 7, something like that?
That was when we were on blogspot.com.
Oh, my God, that must have been 2006.
Way back in the days,
yeah.
Well, the fascinating thing to me about this technology is that all of this 3D human skin stuff is all really designed to try to eliminate animal testing. And so I think that's really kind of a good thing. So we'll see where that technology goes.
Well, as long as no more moles have to give their lives in the pursuit of tattoo artistry, I'm down with it.
Exactly. All right. Well, we talked the hell out of this show, huh?
We are out of time again, so we just quickly can remind people to follow us on social media. We already asked them to leave a review on iTunes for us. Do you want to mention our book?
Our book, It's Okay to Have Lead in Your Lipstick.
And other questions about tattoos that you're dying to know. You can get that anywhere ebooks are sold. You can also get it on our website, and we'll send you an autographed copy. It's still on paper, by the way. It's not on skin.
Yeah, but yeah, regular paper.
There you go. All right. Well, Perry, thanks again for another great show.
Thank you, Randy, and until next time, be brainy about your beauty.
Everything that really counts to be popular, I'll help you be popular. You'll hang with the right cohorts, you'll be good at sports, know the slang you've got to know. So let's start.